One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are on a Tuesday. One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined here in studio by Bills General Manager Brandon Bean in the wake of the 2024 NFL Draft. The class is set, and, well, I guess undrafted rookie free agent signings were going to be completed here in the coming days, I would assume. But you got a bunch of new guys on your roster, and I know on Saturday night you felt really good about, you know, the blend of players that you felt you had. What do you feel is the overarching kind of theme of the class that you were able to assemble here?
Yeah, I think we got some guys, you know, as you look, as you go down the draft, obviously at the top of the draft, you're going, you know, this guy is either a day one starter or a key reserve, or, hey, I think he's going to start in a year, whatever, wherever you're at. As you go down, you're going, all right, is this guy going to be a really good backup, a functional starter, you know, for two or three games, but best role as a backup? And then you talk about fourth down, special teams, things like that. So we tried to hit a lot of those areas. As you go down your board, you start looking less at value, you know, on your board, and more how do they make the team, and filling some position holes, versus at the top you're going, I'm trying to get the best damn player I can get. And so, you know, I would say the other theme we really tried to hit was a lot of our Bills DNA beyond the skill set. And you can be Bills DNA as a seventh rounder and not have Bills DNA as a first rounder. You know, we put the talent where it is, but just that leadership, professional habits, smart for your position, all those intangibles that will help you not only achieve where we see your physical talents, but exceed them.
One of the things that came out this week, and leading up to the draft, we're in this mock draft season, and where everybody's talking about trading up, trading down. It was just reported, Albert Breer came out today, and I wanted to mention this. So New England's sitting there at number three, and everybody's asking you, all our fans are like, hey, why don't you trade in the top 10 and get one of those guys, you know, and that, right? And we tried to say, listen, first of all, it's really expensive. And secondly, you got to get somebody to say yes. So New England's sitting there at number three. It's been reported they were offered Minnesota's 11th and the 23rd pick in the first round and next year's 2025 first rounder and swapping three picks back in this draft so that the Vikings would get New England's three picks in later rounds, and they would split. So the Vikings would get better picks in those rounds because New England's number three. Yeah. So they were getting three ones and just flipping some other picks, and New England said, nah, we're not going to do it. It's expensive to move up. Oh, my gosh. Three ones, and they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, that tells you what it is. And you know, quarterback is the premium position. You got to do that. And when you trade up that high in the round to get one of these premier players, you know, I would say probably the biggest trade up we remember for a receiver, and I know that's what people wanted, was the Julio Jones deal. And listen, they did make a Super Bowl, but tell me where for a non-quarterback it's made sense to give up, you know, future ones and all that stuff. It sounds sexy at the time, but it's I bet you a lot of teams had buyer's remorse after they did it, and it just we felt there was depth at this class. You know, I get it if you're going, hey, there's two or three receivers that you'll ever be able to get your hands on this draft, and if you don't go get one of those, you're SOL for the season. And we didn't see it that way, and just again, it allowed us to fill other holes and find other players that can help us going forward.
Yeah. Right. I think as people learn more about Keon Coleman after he was your first pick of the draft, they realize he's 20 years old, and I think if you couple that with the fact that he was largely a two-sport athlete even halfway through his college career, so I think it's fair to say he doesn't have the reps that a single-sport football player that went through the same path that he did would have. Do you feel like there's a lot that is still untapped with Keon in terms – I mean, the physical ability is readily apparent and the things he's able to do on a football field. But I feel as a 20-year-old with a two-sport athlete that was as good as he was, I got to believe you feel there's a lot of untapped stuff to him that your coaching staff is going to have to get out of him, right, going forward. Like, there's a lot there. Like, high ceiling, I guess. It's a long way of saying high ceiling.
Yeah, you spelled it out there exactly, Chris. You're talking about drafting a guy who's 20, who's got we know the physical talents he has now, but he's not completely grown. We've all seen young men that are 18, 19, 20, 21. He's not 23 or 24. I think at those point you're like, well, they're probably, for the most part, peaked out from that standpoint. But some of these guys still grow. Who knows? He might grow another half inch or something. Like, we don't truly know. And just like he's already got like a 38-inch vertical, we feel there's room to even improve his explosiveness. Mm. And so other things that – you know, that he got from playing basketball, some of that short area quicks that you have playing, that they have helped him. And so we liked a lot of things. We think he's still got some rawness to his game, yet a lot of upside. And you see the contested catches, the basketball ability, the back shoulder. He is a very – a lot of bigger guys, I was explaining to the media, can be stiff and rigid. Yeah. He's a very loose athlete to be a bigger guy. And I think people really got caught up in the 40 time versus play speed. You saw, I think he had the fastest gauntlet time or whatever. You saw more of his play speed actually running, tracking balls than his true track 40 time.
And being a kid so young, you're right. And I remember as a player, and during my career with me and also players I've seen and guys Brownie's covered, we talked about here in the building, you're 20, you're going to be a completely different dude at 24, 25 after you've been an adult and been in the league. So there really is, you know, you do have to kind of project where you think he's going to be, and you kind of get to know what kind of guy he's like, and you think, okay, he's on the right track and he's got the right things in place character-wise to carry him there, right?
Yeah, I mean, and listen, we all felt his energy and stuff like that. He's very young. He's growing into a young man, and that's all part of what we want our culture, and then the facilities that we have here, the staff that we have in not only the strength and conditioning, but our sports performance group with Joe Collins and that staff. We think there are a lot of things that we can do. You know, the coaches are going to coach him on the field. They're going to continue to work on releases, which he has actually a pretty good release package, but they're going to work on more routes than he ran in college. All those nuances of the game of actual football, but there's a lot of things we can do behind the scenes, and he's a competitive dude, and that's one of the things that says when you get competitive dudes like that, they give you the best chance. They're going to want to come in when you show them and lay it out. This is the trajectory we have for you.
Yeah,
give us a little insight on Cole Bishop, a guy that's really intriguing. For a lot of people, it's hard to evaluate a position they don't ever watch. You know, they're watching the ball, and unless he makes the tackle, they don't see what a safety really does. But when you do talk to him and watch his film, he seems to be out ahead of it mentally.
He is. I think that's where you start. This guy's a good athlete. You're talking about a guy who's in the low 4.4s. We were just talking about speed. You see his speed, a guy that played down in the box at Utah but also showed he can go in the back end. We've obviously been spoiled here with Micah and Jordan for all these years. The versatility in Sean's defense that he likes the safeties to have, it gives him more options, more disguises of blitzes, who's covering who, what are we in, what looks are we in. We were even installing a three safety package last year with adding Taylor Rapp to the group. And so having a guy that's not always in the core, in the box, or always in the deep half, it keeps, you know, offenses from being able to get you on a mismatch on a guy in here. And Cole can match up, you know, with receiving weapons, whether it's a tight end, back, receiver down when he's down there. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about the DNA I talked about earlier. This guy is super smart, professional habits, his personality. I told people all along once I met him, he's like Dalton Kincaid at a different position. Coincidentally, I was like, man, we were talking about Dalton with him, but it's really a lot of the same. He's just going to come in, yes, sir, no, sir. I'm going to let my play speak for myself. You know, Keon's a little different. Keon's going to talk a little bit, which is part of his swagger.
He'll talk you into it. Yeah.
But we're excited to get Cole, and we were super fired up when that opportunity
came. Did you ask him if he shaved yet? I mean, I know they called him the baby-faced assassin of Utah. Yeah. I don't know if that guy's met a razor yet. I mean, what? Talk about a baby face. Oh, my gosh.
He probably hadn't. I mean, another guy who's 21 and, you know, an underclassman. And so it's funny. It made me feel old. He was born on the same same day as my kid who's in college. So I was like, geez, this is getting crazy. Yeah.
Saturday night after you wrapped up, you described your team as one in transition. And with the roster turnover this offseason, we understand why. I know the influx of young leaders was important. You drafted four captains, but you also mentioned getting players with an edge. First, just for the listening audience, describe what a player with an edge is for you. And then second, why did you feel you needed to increase the edge quotient for this roster?
Yeah, I mean, not everyone, they all embrace some form of physicality, right? This is football. It's not flag. It's tackle. Mm-hmm. So everyone understands what comes with that. But Steve can tell you, like, there were guys, they seek the contact. They get a high off of the contact. Others do it because they have to do it to do their job. There's some safeties that want to go get a guy down, and then there's some safeties that want to blow you up. And I'm not talking about Cole here, but a dog is just embracing the physicality of the sport. They're playing to what I call the echo of the whistle. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for any boundary, and we can talk about Ray Davis. Like, you know, I don't think you'll – unless we got to stop the clock in a two-minute situation, I don't think you're going to see Ray Davis step out of bounds. He is going to – and I don't care if it's a linebacker, a safety, a D lineman. He's going to bend it back in there and make them have to get him down, and he's going to see if he can punish them. The same as I talked about in pass pro. He's not looking to match in mirror. If you come in there and you got your pads up and your chin's up, he's going to see if he can hit you under the chin.
And one of the guys that you got later in the draft, Javon Solomon, edge rusher, kind of the first thing you think is, wow, I don't know, he's kind of a tweener kind of guy, but then you kind of read his measurables. The guy's got like orangutan arms. He's like got arms that are like 34 inches.
Yeah.
So he can really play the edge of a defense even though he's not really tall.
Yeah.
Good pass rusher, too. He seems to me like a really slippery dude on the edge.
Very natural pass rusher. You know, guys have it or they don't. There's guys with measurables, can run 40s, are explosive, high vertical, but they don't have that innate feel or they've got a stiffness. Yes, he's just under 6'1", so he's not as tall as most. If he was 6'3", with those arms and the way he rushes, he'd have gone a lot higher in the draft. But he overcomes his height with his arm length. He's got some natural moves. He's got a feel. Some guys can't find the quarterback in the pocket. They get lost in their guy, and they have no – this guy, when you watch him rush, you can feel he knows when the quarterback's stepping up. He knows when he needs to spin back inside. He knows when the quarterback's about to bail and he can keep going around. He knows when I got to use the long arm and try and walk the guy back to cage rush a little bit. So you don't just fall into 16 sacks. Yes, there's some that happen. The guy rolled into him, but you're not going to get 16 of those in a season. And obviously, he had 32 or 33 for his career. And looking forward to watching him. In our system, I really thought 3-4 teams would really value this guy high, but he was still there. And for us, he'd be kind of a DPR, maybe a joker role.
Yeah, because he's got that motorcycle lean, too, when he gets around the edge. It's really kind of cool to see him operate. You described Tylan Grable, Travis Clayton as developmental players. We know why. Grable's still young at the position. Clayton's never played the position.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Clayton falls into this category as an international player, but you've had your fair share of late-round picks who, on a veteran roster, weren't good enough to make the 53. You put them to your practice squad, and then you get guys poached, which has to be enormously frustrating because then they go to other rosters and play on a 53, and it happened again last year. Is there a way that you've kind of devised with your personnel? How do we get around that? And I realize there might be a few more openings this year with the roster turnover that you've had, but I imagine, you know, you make that draft investment, you want to develop them yourself, not for somebody else. And yet, you know, you can't keep everybody. I get it. But have you tried to say, because I got to believe, you know, knowing how much you value your draft choices, you're like, there's got to be a better way to hold on to these guys.
Yeah, you try your best. Listen, you're always bringing competition and depth because you don't know when injuries will strike. And you'd rather them, in my world, I'd rather them strike in preseason while I've still got the roster up to 90. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen that way. I mean, you'd like no injuries. But, yeah, I mean the young man we drafted last year goes to New England and ends up intercepting us in the game.
And they re-signed him.
Yeah, and that's the worst thing that can happen. You're like, geez, and we lost Nick Broeker, who went on Houston's team, and you're right. It is that fine line. They're going to put film out there in the preseason. You got to kind of play them. You want to keep as many. Maybe this year with the turnover, you know, I definitely, when we got into those fifth, sixth, seventh, was talking, all right, do we think we can keep this guy if we're healthy? We know if injuries happen, yes.
And yeah.
At the end, you're right. The odds of us keeping all 10 is probably not realistic, but we're adding competition and we're adding depth, and you know the cream will rise to the top. Hopefully, if we can't, we can get them back to P squad. Right. But you know, obviously, there's no guarantees.
Well, thanks for coming in. I know you're still signing guys. Quintez Cephas yesterday signed another wideout. I mean, you know, before you go, what about you know? What are we looking at here in the coming days? You're about done, right?
Yeah, we're still. You're never done. Done. We're in the mid 80s. You know, now adding Quintez. You know, he's a veteran receiver. Had some success as a kind of a Z or a slot. Played inside out. We in our offense, kind of that number four role, can move up and down the line of scrimmage. Not a burner by any pace, but good hands, good instincts. Chip on his shoulder after what he's been through with, right. You know, the gambling thing that some of these guys, right. You know, this day and age that, you know, it's on their phones and they do it. But looking forward to getting him in here and getting him on the field. But other than that, we'll continue there. You know, teams will move on from some guys. I've seen even some names this morning that are, you know, being purged because they were drafted over in the early rounds. So we'll continue to monitor that. We've added free agents in the past in May and June here and there. So it's not a rush to get to 90. The goal is, you know, by mid-June to be right at it. What are we going to take? Let's take the best 90, most competitive group team that we can to St. John Fisher and be ready for, you know, a new season.
Brandon, thanks for the time.
Thanks,
as always,
Brandon.
Thanks for recapping the draft with us. We appreciate it.
We got it.
We are going to take a break, but we'll be back with more, including our topic of discussion for you at 803-0550 on the phone lines when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live on a Tuesday. Our thanks to Bills General Manager Brandon Bean for popping in with us and kind of recapping the 2024 draft class. In case you missed it, you can always check back after the show is over on BuffaloBills.com or on the Bills YouTube channel if you want to hear it back. But yeah, good conversation with him. I know he's, you know, most GMs are happy with their draft classes when they're all said and done. I don't think I've ever heard a GM come to the podium and be like, boy, did we whiff this year. Can you imagine if somebody ever did that? So, you know, Jim Mora, how do you feel about your draft class?
We stunk. We got nobody.
It was horrible.
We got nobody.
We whiffed.
They're never going to say
seven
that.
Straight times.
Because here's the thing. I mean, all these young guys can really play, and in the right situation, they're going to thrive. But not all of them are going to be in the perfect situation, and not all of them are going to be dropped into a spot where there's space for them to make the club.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on in it, and it's a difficult road to navigate. I'm telling you, to get the right guys for your team is difficult because most of the time you just don't get to pick them.
Right.
You know, you pick the guy that you pick, but there are other guys who would have been a better fit or better player. You know, they're gone. That's the way the draft is. It is a lottery. Basically.
So you heard the Bills general manager talk about his draft class, and the question we put to you today, have the Bills done enough for their offense for the upcoming season? 803-0550 is the number to get on board, 1-888-550-2550, and we have open lines for you there. So we're wide open for your phone calls for the rest of the show. We had our guest right up front in general manager Brandon Bean, so we are wide open up until 3 o'clock, so feel free to chime in, because when you look at it in totality, I want to kind of count up the numbers here, but essentially the Bills drafted a wide receiver, three offensive linemen, a running back, and that was pretty much the slate for the offense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only position on offense they didn't draft was tight end. And quarterback.
Right.
So you let us know. Have the Bills done enough for their offense? You heard Brandon say, you know, they'll keep their eyes peeled. Someone gets, you know, cut loose or some veteran falls out of a tree on some roster that, you know, drafted four people at that player's position and there's a cost savings, you know, you might see some veteran cuts. We saw a couple today. Zay Jones got clipped in Jacksonville after they drafted Brian Thomas. So there are going to be examples like that over the next few days and probably week to week and a half. And if the right fit becomes available, yeah, they could make a move somewhere. As you said, as you heard him say, they're at about 84 on the roster, counting the draft class. And then you'll have the undrafted free agents as well when they're officially announced, when everybody is signed to pen and paper. So you let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Have the Bills done enough for their offense for the upcoming season? Where do you come down on that?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I would have gone into the season without Keon Coleman being drafted. I mean, I think Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir and Kincaid and those guys are really good. Josh is a great equalizer, and with Keon Coleman, a big rangy athlete, yeah, I think they've got enough guys to go. Now, I don't know about the guys behind Samuel, Coleman, and Kincaid and the rest, or Khalil Shakir. The depth is an issue. There's nobody's really caught a pass in the NFL behind these guys. Now I guess they do have some Mac Hollins and the free agents they picked up, but I think there's some question marks in the depth. So I don't know how much of a hit they're going to be able to take injury wise anywhere along their skill positions offensively. Now they may have enough guys. We may find out they've got the dudes. But I think that is a question that needs to be answered, or hopefully it will not need to be answered because everybody will stay healthy. Hard to imagine, though, you're going to go through the season without anybody missing any time. And those are the questions that have to be answered still.
Well, let's get over to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Those are the numbers to join us. And we lead off today with Joe in Williamsville. What do you got for us, Joe?
Hi, guys. I was listening yesterday to Greg Cosell and the three of you discuss the Bills draft. And one player that stuck out was Javon Solomon, mm-hmm. the edge rusher. The way Greg described him, he was sort of small for a defensive lineman. He's 6'1", I think, 246, but he's got real long arms and he's very quick. I was wondering what your guys' thoughts, if the Bills would try him out at linebacker. And as far as the Bills offense having done enough this year, have the Bills done enough for their offense? I don't think they can ever do enough, but with the salary cap, I think their hands are tied. Anyway, I'll hang up and listen to you guys. Thanks a lot.
That's right, Joe. Yeah, you're never done building your team. You're right. And if you can trade a good player out for an even better player, you're going to do that, obviously. But for right now, I like where the roster's at to do that. And for changing a guy's position, I would have to say absolutely not. Not absolutely not, but no. You're drafting guys based on their production and their training and what they've produced in college, particularly in the top half of the NFL draft. There's rarely a guy that you're going to bring in and say, all right, then we're going to make this tight end a wide receiver or vice versa. The guys switch positions, sure, but that's at the lower levels of football. And they could have a guy who plays a specific role or create a role for a guy. But switching positions is extremely rare at the NFL level, extremely rare, because it's a highly technical sport played at a highly intense physical level. So you can imagine learning physical techniques when you're in like a hand-to-hand combat kind of situation, changing it and doing it a completely different set of techniques because you're either inside the box or outside the box. Or on the line of scrimmage or off the line of scrimmage, completely different position. So it's rare that they would change a guy's position at the NFL level. Yeah. It happens maybe occasionally, like corner to safety, that's a little different. You know what I mean? But you're talking about something you're completely different, and it just doesn't happen very often.
Right. And I would say in Solomon's case specifically, Joe, I understand why you're proposing it because he is shorter. As you heard Brandon discuss, though, the length of his arms make up for that lack of height, and he was a very disruptive player. I mean, this is a guy that finished with 32.5 sacks and 49.5 tackles for loss, 5 forced fumbles, an interception, and 3 passes batted down in his career. I mean, ultra productive at the line of scrimmage. And here's the other thing. He only clocked a 4.7 240. His 10-yard split is 1.65. He's not super explosive, and his short area quickness, lateral agility, things like that, not strengths in his arsenal. So to put him off the ball and ask him to drop into space, which he virtually never did at the college level because he's getting double-digit sacks almost every year. I mean, 11, 2 years ago, he got hurt, and he wasn't a starter the next year and only had 4.5, and then last year explodes for 16 to lead college football. You're not moving that guy away from the ball. Where I could see him line up as a linebacker is in a third down obvious passing situation. We've seen Sean McDermott in the past deploy Matt Milano as a pass rushing linebacker. When they started using those three safety looks, they would sometimes use Bernard as a blitzing linebacker up on the line of scrimmage. They would sometimes use Matt Milano as a blitzing linebacker up on the line of scrimmage. And it was just one linebacker on the field and a third safety in a dime look. That might be a place where you use him as a designated pass rush specialist, as Brandon Bean suggested. Let's go back to the phones and to Gary in Lancaster next. What's up, Gary?
Hey, how you doing today? Well, we're talking about plugging and playing people into what we need. I think that's the antithesis of coaching is you need to take your players and put them in situations. And I think everyone wants to replace our team. We want to replace Diggs. You're not going to replace Diggs. It's a different receiver. So you can't just swap pieces. You need to take the pieces you have and you redesign stuff. Now, Joe Brady has a full year now, off season. It's going to be different. And you can't just look and go, I need another one of these. No, you really don't. You need to take what you have and maximize it. And you just talked about on defense, same thing. You can't take a player that's never played that kind of a slot position, whatever, and put him somewhere else. We have to take his strengths and mold it. And that's the beauty of the draft and the changing of our coordinators and stuff is we're going to take and they're going to work together and form a team that way instead of saying, I want X, Y, and Z player in the NFL draft. That's not how it works.
You're right. You don't fit players into your offense or defense. You fit the offense and defense around the skills of your players. You're right. But you're, in a draft, you're picking players that have the widest variety of things that they do really well, so you can do whatever you want offensively or defensively. That's the kind of the thought about Keon Coleman and Cole Bishop and all these guys. You're trying to find guys who can do so much of everything that are such good athletes. You can ask them to whatever, drop into space or come into the box or drop into coverage or rush the passer or catch the ball on a deep route or run the shifty slot routes. You want players that can do all of that really, really well. And there are some of these guys that can do that and with a big athletic body to boot. So you're trying to get those guys because then you can run whatever offense you can ask them to do anything they want. And they can pull it off because they're these athletic freaks. Now, those guys are unicorns. You don't get Tyreek Hills all the time. You don't get Julio Jones all the time. You don't get Calvin Johnson's falling off the truck at night, you wake up in the morning, he's on your front doorstep, right?
Yeah, this guy verts 45 inches. Amazing.
Right. He's 6'5", and he runs a 4.3, and he can vertical 38 inches.
He jumped 45, yeah. Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson was 6'5", and could jump 45 inches in the air. So, he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Those guys don't get dropped off.
Right.
So, yes, you're right. We talk about it more so at this time of year because of the draft and the way these guys are evaluated, not because that's actually how they're going to they're not going to plug them into the offense. They're going to build the offense around them. And same thing on defense. So the more skills they have, the more versatile and the more flexible you can be offensively and defensively.
And we already know that the offense is going to have a lot of newness to it. Joe Brady, full-time OC, and then the new pieces that have been added to the passing game chiefly. But I think here's an advantage for Joe Brady coming in on day one. He does not have to experiment to see what Curtis Samuel can and cannot do in the scope of this offense. The reason why is he worked with him previously in Carolina for a full season. And not coincidentally, Curtis Samuel had the most productive season of his career under Joe Brady, which is an encouraging sign as well. But walking in the door, Joe Brady already knows what Curtis Samuel is capable of, what his strengths are, and what you might want to stay away from with his skill set. He knows Khalil Shakir intimately. He knows what Dalton Kincaid can do. He knows what Dawson Knox can do. So really, he's got to learn Mac Hollins, Keon Coleman, and maybe one or two others. Justin Shorter, who we probably didn't see a whole lot of last year, and a couple of others.
Yeah, Terrell Shavers, Mac Hollins, the whole bit.
So I think that's a good thing, because even though there was turnover, I don't think the list of learning for the OC who's calling the plays to know what his players can and cannot do isn't as long as you might believe. And to me, that's a benefit for sure. Let's go to Butch on the East Side. What's up, Butch?
My guys. I love y'all. I love WG. I love MSG. I love all the fans. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm going to be real brief, and I'm going to be long, but I'll be real brief. Number one is, I got to say this. Prior to February, we didn't have any money. We was broke. We were in debt. This guy named Brandon Bean, somehow, miracle-wise, found money. He cut a lot of name players. He cut a lot of players that did a great job for our organization and represented us well on and off the field. And he found some money. With that money, he went ahead and acquired some players that fill the cabinets. After that, he prepared for the draft. We all, you, Steve, me, Maddie, all of us fans, everybody, always wanted certain players. Now, in my case, yes, I wanted JPJ. Yes, I wanted Devontae Sweat. Yes, I wanted Kool-Aid. Like you said, Chris, put you in the minority. You laugh, right? It's fine. I didn't get those names, but guess what I got? I got a center, I got a cornerback, and I got a D-tackle. That means I'm not looking at the names, I'm looking at what we need.
Mm-hmm.
The fans out there, and I'm not picking on you guys, the fans, I love y'all. So what I'm about to say is no disrespect, I'm not a disrespectful person, is that you guys are out here complaining, still complaining, whining, in the puddle, splashing around, because you didn't get a certain name. Brandon Bean and his staff filled this organization and gave every pick that he drafted will make the team, because he didn't overdraft, he didn't underdraft, he filled every room in that house. Everybody got a new piece of furniture to put in their house, even the undrafted free agents. Now, the thing about it is, collectively, we still got $10 million coming in June. So congrats to Brandon being in the organization and the draft crew and everybody else. Go take a vacation, take a break, because what we're doing is we're disrespecting Josh Allen. And this is why I say this, and I'm going to hang up. Thanks for taking my call. Is Josh Allen is a quarterback that can make a receiver a household name. And it's no disrespect to my man Steve. And I know Chris Browning, you always say, oh, you see, I got to keep picking on Steve, because Steve was the underdog to us on the east side of Buffalo. And he got in as a receiver, and Kelly made him a household name. The same thing with Josh Allen to these other guys. Yeah, I've been saying about Shavers. I've been saying about Shorter. I'm not even going to go back into that. I've been saying that all the time. Brandon Bean didn't mention it. But anyway, the point I'm trying to make is we don't need another receiver. They closed the deal on Quentin when they brought him in and gave him a second chance in life after coming from Detroit. After that, ladies and gentlemen, please do me a favor. Let's enjoy what we have. We probably have one of the best young teams that we've ever had here. But Brandon Bean knew, Sean McDermott knew. Sean said, you know what, Brandon? You're my best friend. We live next door to each other. I'm going to have to get rid of all these old coaches and get young teachers in. He did. And guess what he did? I got young students for these young teachers. I'm just going to coach the football team and manage it. You're going to manage the organization. I'm going to manage the team. Let's win. That's it. I love you guys, man. Thanks so much for taking my call.
All right. Thanks, Butch. Thanks, Butch. A couple of things. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they did. They got players at every level of both sides of the ball, all three levels. And you're right. People do get caught up in their guy. They wanted Brian Thomas Jr., not Keon Coleman. They wanted Xavier Worthy, not Keon Coleman. They wanted Ladd McConkey, not Keon Coleman. I get that, and it's that's what we all do, right? We all have our guys. We want to be right. And there is a level, I think, once you sit back and take a deep breath and you start to hear about why this guy and not your guy, you kind of become more okay with it, and you kind of grow into it. You're right. Josh does elevate the guys around him. All good quarterbacks do, and you're right too. I was a guy standing on the bench watching, drinking Gatorade, and I got in the game, and Jim Kelly made me a household name. They can do that.
I think what you did on special teams kind of made you a household name too, but
maybe
it's another story.
So,
for another day.
But my success as a receiver because I had a quarterback that wanted to throw me the ball because he wanted to be right. Because he wanted me to play wide receiver, and you know, that's the way it works, you know. So I was telling Brownie this in between. I was telling Brandon Bean this. This team's going to be a wagon again, I think. They're going to be tough to beat. It's been 3 years since this team's been beat by more than a single possession. They get beat so infrequently, the losses have names. You know, I mean, you can pick – coming down to the wire of all these losses that it's like this much, it's like an inch away from being, you know, another win for the Bills. It takes everything an opponent has plus some help from us to beat this team. I think it's going to be a lot more of the same this coming season.
Let's go to John in Rochester next. What's up, John?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Travis Clayton, the last guy.
Yep.
I know he was a rugby player. Do you think there's a possibility of utilizing him more ways than just a tackle? Because he's used to having the ball in his hands. His legs are huge. They remind me of Herschel Walker's. And I'm thinking maybe you could use him as a goal line back or the third down tackle like they used Edwards last year, and maybe in the fullback position a little bit. I'll hang up and let you guys talk, and I just wanted to say thanks.
Yeah, I think this is what we've got to remember, John. Travis Clayton has a gigantic learning curve in front of him, and any time spent away from learning offensive tackle stunts his growth. Now, that's not to say you can't line him up at tackle on the goal line and then have him leak out to catch a pass. He's used to having the ball in his hands, and that doesn't take a lot of coaching or a lot of practice to execute that kind of a play. So I wouldn't dismiss something like that. But this guy and the techniques that he has to master in a very short period of time to convince people he's good enough to be on a 53-man roster, it takes a lot. Because when you think about it, just about everybody else on this roster that has O-line next to their name has been playing that position for the better part of the last 5 to 8 years, at least.
Right.
Some longer. Tylan Grable might be an exception because he played quarterback and then tight end before going to offensive tackle. This guy played a completely different sport. I mean, the techniques that you have to master on the offensive line against some of the fastest athletes in the universe trying to blow your doors off to kill your quarterback, you better be polished at this level.
That's right.
So he's got a big learning curve.
Yeah, and I would say he's a long shot, but you're right. He probably is more versatile as an athlete than some of the other offensive linemen we've seen because of his high level of playing another sport. And it enlarges your skill set. Rugby players are used to having the ball in their hands, are used to having the ball around them and being it, carrying it and getting rid of it. Rugby is a different sport and played at a high level, and it's a different kind of physicality as well. I played rugby in college, and there is some crossover, particularly instinctively, when you have the ball. It's completely the opposite of rugby when you don't have the ball because the rules are opposite. So, you know, so.
And there's a lot of stops, more stop start to football than there is to rugby.
That's right. So it's a completely different sport. But yeah, there's some things that do carry over. And certainly he would probably be, you know, yeah, tackle eligible stuff, you know, all of that thing and some trick plays, all that. Certainly he would be more suited for that because of his. experience handling a ball, particularly a ball like a rugby ball as opposed to a football. An American football is much easier to handle than a rugby.
It's going to feel like a grape in
right.
his
hand. Right, so he'll be able – he'll feel confident in handling it. So there's that, but that's – you know, that's down the road.
Yeah.
You know, you're not he
job one is
you're not keeping him on the roster for that.
Right.
He's got to offer more than that.
Let's go to Dan on a cell here. What's up, Dan?
Yeah. It's not about the draft picks. What I want to know is about the play clock. Other sports are smart enough to have a buzzer go off or something whistle. And that tells them when their play clock runs out. It is ridiculous to watch a referee look at the ball, look at the clock, and look back. Besides, I question some of these referees when they do that. When is the NFL going to grow up and actually use a whistle so that you don't have to look away from the ball to know when the play clock runs out?
Well, here's the thing, Dan. You're right. They do give the offenses an extra half a count or a full count sometimes when the play clock goes to zero. Yeah,
depending on the ref.
And the official, it's all finger quote, the official is moving his eyes from the play clock to see the snap. And there's always that gap. The simple fact of the matter is it's irrelevant what that official and the play clock, because the quarterback could snap it whenever the clock runs out, if he knows he's going to get called for it. But because the officials give him that extra beat, the quarterbacks take it. The offenses take it. If you start calling them on it, they'll start snapping the ball the right way. It's not anything that is the league not getting the fact that the team doesn't get the ball off on time. The only thing, they don't care. The only reason the play clock is there is so that the game can fit inside a three-hour broadcast window. It has nothing to do with the football end of it. They can snap the ball early if they want, but the reason they don't is because they want to see if they can get the defense to tell the quarterback what they're going to do. So it's, I get it. It's frustrating for fans to look at it and see the play clock, your opponent's on offense, and their play clock goes to zero, and they snap it late. They don't flag it. They snap it late. It's frustrating. It is. But know this. It goes the same for both sides of the ball. And if they wanted to fix it, if they thought it was really urgent, they would. But I don't think it's that high a priority because of what I just said. They could snap it on time if they really wanted to. But the quarterbacks are always going to push it to the limit. That's all there is to it.
Break time for us here, but more of your phone calls when we return. Got open lines for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Draft class is done. Have the Bills done enough for their offense for the 2024 season? You let us know next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, you heard from Bills General Manager Brandon Bean on this show at the top of the hour, and we're asking you now that the draft class is set, have the Bills done enough for their offense for the 2024 season? 803-0550, the number to get on board. Back to the phones and to Bob in Buffalo. What's up, Bob?
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
How great is it that we get to root for the Buffalo Bills day in, day out, 52 weeks a year? I thought the draft was phenomenal. You got a kid, first pick, second round, who has such youthful enthusiasm, it's contagious. Can't wait to see him every week, what he's going to do and how he's going to do it. I thought the draft was good in the sense that they backed up their defense, which most of our injuries were the last couple of years. You know, other than drafting a 61-year-old speedster couch potato, and I was available, but I thought it was phenomenal because you got Frank Gore Jr. coming in who's going to have an attitude. You got three running backs that just won't stop running. I can't wait to watch them again. Now, I picked them every week last year. Win or lose, they were still the best team in football to me. They just didn't win the Super Bowl. I honestly think that they're going to be there again, like Steve said. And I will shut up and let you guys talk. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, let's face it, it has been ever since Josh stepped on the field and Sean McDermott took over, and Brandon Bean started drafting, the team has been an absolute must-watch appointment television for not just Bills fans, but you saw it last year. They were all like, they were nine weeks of the year. They were playing at an odd time, either prime time or 4:30 window. Everybody wants to see these guys play. They're really difficult to beat. The game is going to be close, even if they don't play well. The other team needs help from this team to beat this team. And if they don't get it, it's a runaway, and Josh is out there hurdling people. So it's the absolute funnest team in football to watch for people who aren't a fan of whatever team we're talking about. And it's going to continue to be that way. Brandon Bean does stuff like this in the draft. He drafts people like it never completely fits your narrative. But we've been, I think, for the most part, extremely happy with the people who do contribute from each draft class. And like Brownie continues to point out, most of the guys they draft get plucked, and some of them are playing for other teams, and they can't even make this roster. It's a high bar. Brandon Bean continues to do it. And you've got a head coach that has – If you're going to quantify or describe the kind of head coach he has been here in Buffalo, it has been maximizing a roster. He has gotten a lot out of a roster. Certainly, he's had players to work with because of Brandon Bean's drafting, but he has overperformed with a roster I go back to the first year he got here. After a 13-year drought, or was it a 17-year drought in the playoffs for the Buffalo Bills, he took a weakened roster. They made a couple of trades right before the deadline, and people accused the club of tanking, and he got them to the playoffs with that roster. Truly masterful. And so this, because of those three things, McDermott being a maximizer of the talent on the roster and fitting an offense and a defense around who he has, Brandon Bean refurbishing the roster and continuing to getting great players from unexpected places, and you get the guy, Josh, and the other key players that they've got, you can't not watch this team. And to me, even though some of the names have changed, that has not. And it's not going to in the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Let's get back to the phones here, and we go to Mark in West Seneca next. What do you got for us, Mark?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Good.
I got an observation and a question off my observation. First of all, I want to say Brandon Bean, unbelievable. Execution of the draft this year was impeccable. To come out of that draft with a wide receiver for your first pick, get the third back, and add a fourth next year, absolutely unbelievable. Execution of free agency and everything, again, with no money, and filling out the roster, unbelievable. The man is just an absolute genius. He's earned the benefit of the doubt of every fan, and he certainly knows more football asleep than I ever know in my whole life. But my observation is this. Leading up to the draft, forget the national talking heads and that. I don't listen to those guys. But I was led to believe by yourselves, I don't know if this was a diversion by Brandon and other local media people, that the Bills were going to go with a dynamic player, receiver, if they could get one, with their first pick. And they were certainly going to attempt to do that. Somebody who had speed, somebody who was going to bring big plays to the offense. And then I was led to believe a little bit that out of all the group of guys, even maybe who might have been left, and when the Bills were going to pick, that Coleman was on the bottom end of that. And it certainly seemed that. And as the way the draft played out, I was really excited that Mitchell was there. And to see that they passed on him three times led me to believe they took him off their board for whatever the character reasons or whatever. And that he had the most talent of everybody that was left, mm-hmm. and we didn't go ahead and pick him. Now, I'm not trying to say anything negative about Coleman. I mean, if that kid plays as big as his personality, not only is he going to be exciting and productive, he's going to be fun to watch. I absolutely loved his interview. So I'm open to what he's going to bring to the offense. But I was led to believe that he was going to be more on the down of the list than at the top for us to pick him. My question is this. Now that we've picked him, is this a signal that Joe Brady's going to go to a less vertical offense, especially with the boundary receivers, and that he's going to run more crossing patterns with those guys and more of a mid-range to intermediate to underneath kind of offense with the running game. Because a guy with Coleman's ability, size, big hands, catchability, may be more versed in doing that kind of thing than he could be effective running him long, but I don't think that's going to be his game. And I'm just curious as to what you guys think. Am I on to something? Am I out in left field like usual? But, again, is that what they're looking at more? And I have nothing against running that kind of offense. It could be very effective.
Right.
Especially when we got Josh as the quarterback. So that's my question and my observation.
Yeah.
You guys have
and
a great
And, right. you know, that's a good observation, Mark. I mean, I'll just say that we don't really know exactly what tweaks and changes Joe Brady is going to make with the offense as he puts his stamp on it as the full-time offensive coordinator now. And we're all going to try to read between the lines based on the personnel that Brandon Bean acquired. I know this. I know Joe Brady just told the personnel department, just get me good football players and we'll make it work. So I don't think who they picked was done purposely for the kind of offense that Joe Brady may want to draw up. Now, I'm not saying they're trying to try to put a square peg in a round hole. But as Steve said at the top of the show, good coaches tailor their offensive and defensive schemes around the talents on their roster, not the other way around. And I think Joe Brady falls into that category. So no matter who they got for him, I think that he would have made it work. Now, all that being said, we know that Brandon Bean wanted to diversify his receiving core, and he already had separators in Dalton Kincaid, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel, guys that can separate quickly in the route. I think he needed size, which we saw in the form of Mac Hollins last year with Justin Shorter, this year in round two with Keon Coleman, because I think he wants an element of physicality and bully ball also in this receiving core, because different opponents require different approaches to win a football game. And I think he feels if he diversifies the talent at the receiver position, he expands the options that Joe Brady can turn to try to win a football game.
Yeah, and you're right. When you get to see, and I didn't know what Keon Coleman was like before I started seeing the stuff on One Bills on the Buffalo Bills website, on our own website, when he's walking around in the yellow puffy coat. I guess that's going to be a fashion statement for Bills fans this year, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to have a yellow puffy coat. But he seems like the right kind of guy, and certainly if there are other guys who, I mean, you're talking about A.D. Mitchell. He was the 11th wide receiver taken in this draft.
He was supposed to be first rounder. He slid all the way to 52, and yeah, that wasn't for no reason.
That's not for no reason. All of that stuff goes in, and these teams find stuff out that we aren't privy to, and obviously the Buffalo Bills aren't the only ones who had A.D. Mitchell sliding down the board. I don't know whether he completely got taken off the Bills board. I don't know why the Bills like everybody over A.D. Mitchell. I don't know A.D. Mitchell from anything. But
there were character concerns.
But
it was well publicized.
But there it is. And so, that's why you got to trust these guys who are in on the inside of it, talking to these guys, getting to know these guys, watching film with them.
And doing the recon with other people.
And asking people who work with these guys what kind of person they are. And you got to trust that. You got to trust that that's
taking place. And that's the one element that people like us and the listeners on the outside will never know. And that's the difference. Well, why didn't this guy get taken? Why didn't this guy get taken? Well, they had character issues that we didn't know about because we're not the ones beating the bushes to try to find out their background and everything else since middle school.
Yeah.
Got to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. Have the Bills done enough for their offense? You let us know next at 803-0550. Back in a flash here on One Bills Live.
on Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two here on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on Bills Live. Still chopping up the draft class and also asking you at 803-0550, have the Bills done enough for their offense for the 2024 season? You let us know. As we have open lines for you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Nothing but phone calls from you the rest of the way here as we had Brandon Bean last hour on the air here in studio. So if you missed that, be sure to check back on the website, buffalobills.com, or on the Bills YouTube channel after the show is over and done with. But let's get back to the phones, and we begin here with Jordan out in L.A. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
You know, I was listening to you guys talk about Travis Clayton earlier, and I just had a funny thought. You know, they drafted him as a tackle, I guess. And, you know, why not just take the guy for what he is? I mean, he's 6'8", over 300 pounds, and he's a rugby star. Why not line him up as a power back on third down with a yard or two to go? You know, and Josh is not going to be, you know, young forever. So, you know, could you imagine lining that guy up on the 1 or 2 yard line and letting him power it in for a touchdown? I mean, if you think about it, I mean, I don't think anybody is that big. He's probably twice the size of Derrick Henry. You know, when you think about it, it's kind of comical. I mean, the guy's legs are bigger than Brownie, you know, so
yeah.
I think lining him up and ramming it down the defense's throat for 2 or 3 yards, I think is pretty realistic given he's a rugby player. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly I'll give you full marks for imagination.
It's intriguing. I get it. He's used to handling the ball. He's used to running with the ball in his hands. He comes with probably some of those instincts as well with the ball in his hands. It wouldn't be foreign to him. I get it. It's fun to think about. Maybe they will. But he's trying to play offensive tackle in the NFL. You're right. Sometimes guys get pigeonholed because of certain things, either their speed or their, in this case, his size. You know, nobody's ever had a 6'8" running back. I mean, you'd have guys on this roster who are an entire foot shorter than him playing the same position if you put him back there.
Davis being one of them.
Someday somebody will have a running back like him, maybe. But I don't know that he's the guy. I'm all about it. I give the guy a shot. If he wants to try it and he's up for it and can do it, you can. But let's face it. You say he's twice the size of Derrick Henry. He's also twice as slow. He's half as fast. Derrick Henry could scoot at his size. Travis Clayton cannot. I mean, for a big man, yes, he's fast, but he's not fast at an NFL level with the ball in his hands. You know, you've got half your coaching staff that could outrun the guy. So that's just that's the point of it. He's just not fast enough to carry the ball effectively. Yeah. Certainly, I get it, short yardage, goal line, where you just got to run a couple of yards. You just get to the line of scrimmage and get the yard. I get that. But you've got to offer a lot more than that to get a roster spot at an NFL level. You got to, like, cover kicks. You got to, you know, short yardage, goal line back. You got to be, you know, an offensive tackle. You've got to bring a lot to the table to get on the roster.
And, I mean, long range, his career is going to be as a pass protector. And a blocker in the run game. I mean, that's what his skill set offers. And I realize his previous skill set in his previous life, playing rugby, might entice you to go in a different direction. I think if you want to make it a bit part of what he is, that's fine in goal line situations. But he's going to have a 10-year career if he's able to understand the techniques of playing offensive tackle, I believe. It's interesting, but I don't think it's what's going to give him a career that has some longevity to it here in the NFL.
If you're going to carry the ball as an NFL player, you got to be fast. And I get it. Short yardage and goal line, all that sounds like you don't really need to be that fast. You got to be fast.
Yeah. Let's get back to the phones and to Rob out in Connecticut. What do you got for us, Rob?
Good afternoon, Chris. Good afternoon, Steve. First off, I would like to say that, you know, as a avid caller and fan listener, I have to say that
Butch is probably one of my favorite callers to listen to. He always puts a smile on my face. So keep doing what you're doing, Butch, if you're listening. And the other thing for you, Steve, before I get to the question of the Bills, is did you play scrum half, prop, or wing when you played rugby?
I played fullback.
Oh, you're a fullback. All right. I was a winger with the Doylestown Rugby Club.
Yeah, I was.
Anyway,
yeah, I was MVP of the Big Ten tournament in 1985.
There you go.
Nice, nice. Yeah, my father played with the Doylestown Rugby Club, and I was 14 years old playing with men. They didn't have high school rugby at the time, so yeah. I was a weak side wing. Anyways, my big thing is I'm very, very happy with the O-line. I like what they did with the center, picking up this center.
Yep.
That gives us definitely great depth. But, I mean, for me, it's the question mark of who's the number one receiver. And I think a lot of other fans are feeling that same way. That's just a huge question mark. I like the receiving core that we have, and I know that the Bills are going to work with these guys a lot, but who's the number one? That's the big question for me. With that, guys, thank you very much. Always a pleasure listening to you. Keep doing what you're doing.
No problem. This might be unconventional, but I think the number one is Dalton Kincaid right now. I wouldn't be shocked if he has 110, 115 targets by the end of the season. I could see him being target number one in this offense going forward. And the only reason I say him is because none of us really truly know what Curtis Samuel's role is going to be. But I think if Curtis Samuel is in one, he could be two, and then Shakir.
Yeah.
Keon Coleman can walk in the door, and even if he's a starter, it could be option four on most plays, which, I don't know, to some might sound crazy, but I don't think he would rule that out as a possibility. But I think that's to be determined. I think this is a coaching staff that, since they walked in the door, has been all about earning your time on the field, your spot in the pecking order. And so I believe that they're going to let it play out through the spring and in training camp. And if you've proven to be a guy that can get open, can make plays, that your quarterback trusts, you're going to get a lot of looks.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Curtis Samuel being the number one or Keon Coleman being the first option, but Kincaid's going to get a ton of targets. So is Khalil Shakir. I think those will, Curtis Samuel remains to be seen, but this is a guy, Curtis Samuel, who's put together some really nice seasons playing with guys like Taylor Heinicke.
Teddy Bridgewater.
I mean, he's never been in an offense like the one he's going to play in this year.
And he had 60 catch seasons with guys like that.
So I'm thinking Curtis Samuel is going to feel like he's getting a nice drink of water after a long dry spell. I think it's going to be a lot easier season for Curtis Samuel, you know, coming here to Buffalo and working in this offense. I think he's going to be refreshed. So I'm fine with that, the way it is, you know.
And
Curtis Samuel can be my number one.
Right. And look, I'm sensing from fans, because nobody knows, the same kind of angst they had last year when they said, who's going to replace Tremaine Edmonds? And we still didn't know going into the regular season, because Terrell Bernard was injured and missed the entire preseason. And then he stepped into the lineup, and very quickly all was right with the world. Because that guy made more plays than anybody on the. I voted for him for defensive MVP last year.
Right.
First year starter. So put your faith in the coaching staff that they're going to make the right decisions in terms of that pecking order. To Bill in Orlando next. What do you got for us, Bill?
Hi, Bill. I mean, hi, guys. I love you guys. A longtime Bills fan, and also the guy that watched from 1961 on. So I have this question. I cannot figure the logic at all. We needed a receiver. Why didn't they take Rice's son instead of this guy?
Take who?
Brendan Rice?
Yeah.
Clearly not as high a prospect on their board. And if I remember right, he went pretty late in the draft, day three.
Yeah, well, he did, but take him over a rugby player? Understand that.
Oh, you're talking about Travis Clayton. I see what you're saying. I thought you meant over Keon Coleman, the other receiver.
No.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I get it. I think when you get late in the draft as a general manager, and we heard Brandon address this because I talked to him about late-round picks getting poached off his practice squad the last several years. And he said it is a discussion that we have. If we're healthy, does this guy have a chance to make our roster? And that is a question that they ask themselves as they're getting closer to their pick in the sixth round and the seventh round. Because if you have two players at different positions that are relatively even and you feel that there's more of an opportunity at one position than the other, you're picking that position if it means keeping them on the roster.
Right.
Otherwise, it's a wasted pick. And that's the last thing they want to do. Yeah. Maybe some of that came into play with that because people are like, I can't. And look, I was a proponent as much as anybody for them drafting two receivers. They didn't do that. But what did they do the day after the draft? They signed Quintez Cephas, who's played in the league for 3 years, which to me is every bit as good as drafting a guy in the seventh round. I mean, you have a guy that's shown he can play in the league. So,
yeah, when you're – they didn't draft Brendan Rice the same reason 31 other teams didn't draft Brendan Rice. Not that he's a bad kid, but there's just better options for them at other positions. That's all there is to it. I get it. I don't know what kind of career Brendan Rice is going to have. I'm sure he's going to have a very nice life, and he's got a lot going for him. But, I mean, why did you pick Brendan Rice and not, you know, Ryan Flournoy? You know, I mean, he was picked right just ahead of him. And why is Brendan Rice different than Jaden Davis, who was picked the exact pick after Brendan Rice? Why, I mean, just I get it. Jerry Rice was the greatest receiver ever, you know, lace it up. But, you know, there's a reason why Brendan Rice was available in the seventh round.
Yeah. To Judy in Buffalo. What's up, Judy?
Okay, I have to admit, I was kind of naive. I thought the Bills could make a big splash at 28. You know, now I'm thinking about it. That was really out of contention. I like the way they did the draft. And here's the reason why. To be in contention, any team has to win 10 or 11 games this year. And that's what the Bills have got to do. I think they have the talent to do it. And furthermore, when you talk about what we have, football comes down to this. You have to make 10 yards every three downs. And I think the Bills can do that. The object is to get close enough to either kick a field goal or score a touchdown. At worst, you make the other team go 80, 90 yards, and maybe something can happen in the meantime. So the point is, you need a team that can win 10 to 11 games, and I think the Bills have preserved that.
All right. Fair enough, Judy.
Fair enough. I'll say this, too. You're right. We talk around it a lot in the lead up to the draft. Brownie and I do this as much as anybody. You pretend or you think like your team is really going to get, you know, we need to trade up into the top 10. We need to, because innately we think the 28th pick of the draft, really, you can't find that guy. And we saw the writing on the wall. Brian Thomas Jr., the closer and closer we got to the draft, the further and further away he got, right? And he did make it to 23, but if you heard the first segment of the show, we found out how expensive it was to move up in this draft where teams were turning down three ones to move up from with two first-rounders included. This year's two first-rounders from Minnesota had the 11th and the 23rd pick. They wanted to move up into the top five and added next year's first-rounder, and the answer was no. That's how hard it is to move up in this draft.
Yeah.
So the further and further, closer you get to this draft, the more you realize the 28th pick is like, and Brownie and I were like, well, we might move up a few spots, but you're going to get, like the Bills, you're going to get the sixth guy. And the Bills got, I think, the guy they wanted out of the guys after Brian Thomas Jr. and Adunze and Neighbors and Harrison. They got the next guy they wanted after that because they figured they had an idea, a handle on what other teams were going to take. So they traded back twice and picked up some picks and still got their guy. And that's kind of what the draft is. And, Judy, you're right. And I'll say this, too. We talked about it. I was talking about this in the office the other day. The Bills, I'm thinking they're going to be a lot of first downs team. And you can say, well, I want to be a big play team. I get that.
But you've got a guy like Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid with Curtis Samuel. I mean, they're going to be able to make some first downs. And with the offensive line they've put together, good grief. I was saying maybe every third first down statistically, wouldn't it be nice if the Bills handed it off twice? First and 10, now it's second and 4, now it's first and 10 again, and he handed it off twice. Just not all the time. But, man, oh, man, then you put that where you got number 17 taking snaps and the defense is going, man, he's going to throw it all over the yard or he's going to run it on us again. That is an enormous amount of pressure this offense can put on people. And I'm not saying they should be a run-first offense. No way. But, man, to have that in your back pocket with these weapons around it that can just catch the ball wherever he throws it, man, oh, man, I think it's we may lead the league in first downs. We were very high in it last year.
Bills were third in the league in first downs per game, first in the league in third down conversion rate. So to Judy's point,
you're going
to
win 10
games. They do a damn good job of that.
You're going to win 10 games doing that, maybe way more than that. I mean, the Bills get beat so infrequently. I mean, they had 6 losses last year, well, plus the playoff loss, but in the regular season when they were struggling, flopping around, it is so hard to beat them. Every loss has got its own name. I mean, goodness. I mean, we're talking about this heroic kick in Philly in a rainstorm. That's the only way Philly's got a chance to beat them.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and overtime in Tampa.
And they helped them because they missed a kick of their own in that game.
Oh, my God. It goes on and on. I mean, this team has to help you if you're going to beat them.
Let's go to Sully in Buffalo. What's up, Sully?
Hi, Brownie. Hey, Steve. How are you?
Good.
I'm a little tired of the narrative nationally and locally that somehow we handed the Chiefs Xavier Worthy as if it was our responsibility to keep them from getting Xavier Worthy. Yeah. If Brandon Bean wanted him, he could have taken him. Okay. And I agree with Steve. I think we got our guy after the first 4 were gone and we got a third that we didn't have. And, you know, no one's asking the Chiefs, why'd you give the Bills a third? You know, I think some people are acting like he's the next Tyreek Hill, which maybe he will be. But he could also be the next Cardavius Toney or Sky Moore or whoever, right? So I think we got to wait and see how it rolls out. But there's a lot of beating that drum that somehow we made a mistake because now the Chiefs have Worthy. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I said this the other day, and I can't remember if it was on The Daily Show or during our draft coverage when we were on the live stream. But what Brandon Bean said after night 2 of the draft basically solidified for me the whole framing of why they traded down when they traded down. Brandon Bean essentially admitted that they had more players with second-round grades than they had with first-round grades in this draft class. To me, that's an indication that he saw the best value in this draft on day 2 in the second and third round. What did he not have going into the draft? A third-round draft choice. So I think that he looked at the value on the board, looked at the depth of the receiver class, said, look, I'm down to 28 already. I can move back 5 picks, and I can get 3 day 2 choices instead of 1, and I can still get a receiver that we need. And he did it. So, to me, if anybody's got issues with that, I don't know that you fully grasp the value of a draft class. And it can be different from one year to the next. And I'm not saying there wasn't elite talent in this draft. There was. I don't think Keon Coleman's too far off from it, just in terms of elite physical traits and stuff like that. So, for my money, trading back was the right play this year because it was evident to me that the Bills GM, along with others, saw the true value and meat and potatoes of this draft in rounds 2 and 3.
Let me say this. Brownie and I go round and round. Both of us feel a little bit – I mean, the one thing we got right in this whole draft thing is that we felt like Xavier Worthy was not the guy for the Bills because he's too small. Like you go, you know, we've seen Isaiah McKenzie come through, even Deontay Hardy last year. Now the Bills have got K.J. Hamler on their roster now. Deontay Hardy, think back in the past, like guys like Gerald McNeil back when I played.
Roscoe Parrish,
Billy White Shoes Johnson, all these guys that were little And they had flashes. And I'm not saying Xavier Worthy's going to go to Kansas City and disappear. He's basically, what you're going to see is a new version of Isaiah McKenzie. He's going to flash. He's going to have a play here and a play there. Then he's going to disappear. And then he's going to show up, and you're going to say, why can't he do that like day to day? Why can't he do that today like he did last week and the next week? Why can't he keep doing that? I can't tell you why. All I know is it's a reality. The guys that are really light, they don't break tackles. They're not as fast at this level as they were at the last level. And they get swallowed up. There's a ton of them out there that have had moments, but that's what they are. They're fleeting moments. And they give you an idea of why they're intriguing. But I'll say that I told a buddy of mine yesterday, you know, he said, the Chiefs, they got this guy, the Chiefs, we're chasing the Chiefs. I go, listen, never interrupt your enemy when they're about to make a mistake. And I'm one of the guys that thinks they did. Now, they haven't made too many of them.
No, they've drafted well.
I'm not getting in the way of this one that I think it is. I think it is. But they may prove me and history wrong. But it's been a long time coming, waiting on a guy of that physical stature to make a lasting impact on a team.
Have the Bills done enough for their offense for 2024? The draft class is set. You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Got to take a break here, but we lead off with Mark and Tonawanda when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Back here on One Bills Live on a Tuesday, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, talking about whether or not the Bills have done enough for their offense for the upcoming 2024 season in the wake of the 2024 NFL Draft. Back to the phones we go, and to Mark in Tonawanda. What's up, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Just to that last caller, and I mean, you guys are kind of pumping me up a little bit about the pick, but it's just a matter of who for me. With letting the Chiefs get Xavier Worthy, and the thing is, he checks off a ton of boxes for the Bills. He really does. Those swing screen passes that Diggs just couldn't seem to thrive under Joe Brady, whether it's age or what have you, but he really does check off a lot of boxes. And I feel like it's like a defeated feeling. You know, it's like you catch your girl out on a date with somebody else, and then you got to pick up the tab. That's how I felt. And, you know, this team has owned you. Three times in the playoffs, has sent you home, and to just gift that to him, I mean, kudos to Brandon Bean for having the stones to do that, because I don't know, it's tough to do against Andy Reid and those guys. I'm going to listen to your thoughts, but I just feel defeated. I don't know. I feel just bland about it.
I don't
have to listen. Thanks, guys.
Don't get caught. My advice, don't get caught up in the Chiefs and how they're doing it. They got a different set of problems than the Bills have. We got our own guys. We have the Bills and Brandon Bean and John McDermott. You build your team as best you can for you. Don't worry about how those other teams are doing it. Now, certainly the Chiefs have got it going on, and they don't make very many mistakes. But I'll say this. If you believe they are, don't get in their way. And in fact, you know, hey, make the trade with them. Let them take that guy. You can't build your team looking at somebody else's roster. That's all there is to it. You can't build your team looking at somebody else's roster. So just do your thing. Build it the way you want to build it. Have faith in the way you're doing things and know that you're going to be successful at some point. So I get it. The Chiefs are hard to look at for Bills fans, but don't start trying to build your team by tearing theirs down.
Yeah. Yeah, Brandon said it too. Like, you got to focus on your team and what's best for your team. And what was more important than who the heck the Chiefs were drafting was getting three day two picks, not one. That's where they saw the best value in the draft. So to turn one pick into three on day two, where they had more players graded than they had in round one, to them was better value and more beneficial to the club. So instead of taking Keon Coleman at 28 and then picking once at 60 and being done until day three. They picked Keon Coleman at the top of round two, got Cole Bishop and Dwayne Carter. So to them, it's a win for the Bills. You guys are thinking too much about how it helps the Chiefs, and you're not thinking about what the haul was for the Bills in the process. Three players. Three in the top 100. So
and
that's
I mean,
the difference.
Which you've,
and guess who's not picking at 95? Kansas City.
Right. And you'd think, too, if the acid test is for yourself, and all of you may have different answers for this, what would you have done have the Bills stayed at 28, picked Keon Coleman, and the Chiefs pick Xavier Worthy at 30 or 32? Would that change anything for you? Maybe for some of you, maybe you had your eyes set on Xavier Worthy because he was the fastest guy. Okay. Getting the assets and getting the guy they wanted, I think you got to be okay with it. Certainly the Bills are, and they're the ones whose jobs and reputations are on the line, and they're the ones who have to play with the roster they're building. So I'm willing to go with what their judgment is. And, you know, just the brief conversations we have with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, those guys are grinding it, man, over these guys. They know a lot of things about all of these players that they take to the draft room and use. So stuff that – and we've been talking about a lot. We don't know what they feel about the draft picks that we're going to pick this year in this draft class. We don't know about all the Adunzes and the Harrison Juniors and the Brian Thomas Juniors and the Keon Colemans and the Ladd McConkeys, the whole name, all the list. We don't know what they think about those guys. And, in fact, we don't even know what they think about the guys that are already here. And that's all that matters. So we can do what we want, but I think and when push comes to shove, not that we have much of a choice, we kind of have to trust what those guys do with their judgment and knowing what they know.
To Alex on a cell next. What's up, Alex?
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. You guys hit it on the head. I'm looking at this as we moved up 45 spots and pushed the Chiefs to go down, and we got our third. Everybody's looking at the first round, the five spots. And just like you said before we picked up the call, was we could have got Keon Coleman and they could have still got Worthy. But instead, we went up from 133rd to over 95 overall, and we took a third round from our rivals. So we weaken their position and strengthen ours for five spots, and I'll take that trade every day. Just want to say that.
And I'll take Keon Coleman over Xavier Worthy any day, too.
I will, too. I got to be honest. I do. I would, too. Listen, Brownie and I might both be wrong about it, but I doubt it. We have not seen the Chiefs. Listen, nobody's perfect. Nobody drafts perfectly every year. Nobody is, but the Chiefs have been doing a fantastic job in the last few years.
Yeah,
I think this might be the first false move we've seen them make.
Well, since Clyde Edwards-Helaire, wasn't a first-round pick either.
There you go. So they do make them once in a while, and, you know, hopefully the Bills can turn it around and make them pay for this one. I don't know. But I would absolutely have taken our guy ahead of theirs, even if we had to choose with no trade or anything.
To Elliot in Rochester. What's up, Elliot?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, remember how we put an end to the talking about the Bills window closing? You think we could do that about the Xavier Worthy trade soon?
I'm happy to put a moratorium on it by the end of this week.
Right. Yeah. So, and then the other thing I just wanted to talk about was Travis Clayton, the prospect of rugby player. So first off, Steve, awesome to know you played rugby at college. I played at Cortland State, so shout out Cortland and with the Rochester Aardvarks, but played fly half and flanker. But, Steve, you know this, and Brownie, you probably know too, but I don't think a lot of the listeners might not realize that in rugby there's zero blocking component. I mean, with the exception of a maul and the pushing in a scrum, it's an entirely different skill set to come to the NFL and play tackle, left tackle, right tackle. The Eagles did a great job developing Jordan Mailata, but outside of that traditional tackle role, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, I remember someone called a few months back and asked, you know, what's that new cutting edge thing that the Bills need to develop, kind of like they did with the high tempo and hurry up offense back in your day, Steve. You know, what are the options for the Bills to maybe put this guy in the backfield and block, or if he's sure-handed, to maybe even run those? Just find a new way to gadget in some, like, tackle-eligible stuff. And, you know, just wanted to pick your brain on that, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, it's interesting. We talked about it a little bit in the last segment. He does have some skill and some comfort with probably with the ball in his hands, because all rugby players kind of handle the ball. Anybody can run with the ball. And you're right. The thing about rugby, for those of you who don't know, rugby's a game where the guy with the ball has to be the point of the spear. He has to be ahead of everybody. The ball running can't have any interference in front of him. He has to run by himself through the defenders. So there is no blocking. There is no front interference. You know, you don't pull guys in front of him and have him block guys out of the way so he can run freely. It's just the opposite of that. The ball has to go first, and your teammates all have to follow you with the ball. So that fundamentally negates any need for any of these rugby players to know how to block guys. They don't know how to do it. It's not part of their game. It's against the rules, in fact. So,
and you're not just blocking forward, you block in reverse too.
And that's a problem for new guys to the sport. Now, conversely, a guy like, you know, a guy like this Clayton, he has some skill with the ball in his hand. He is used to it. But conversely, in the NFL, everybody on the field who handles the ball can outrun anybody you know. I mean, even the slow guys, yeah. They can outrun anybody you know, just about. And you got to be one of those guys to handle the ball at the NFL level. You're not going to hand it to a 6'8", 305-pound guy just because he's big. Because there's not only will he take three steps, there's going to be 11 guys hanging on him because they can all catch him. And they're all going to be running hard at him. So he's not going to get to run like that. And, you know, certainly they can block for him. But he can't outrun anybody. And that's an issue. That's a real problem. So I'm intrigued by it as much as anybody is. His comfort with the ball, his skills, all of that is fun to think about. But he's going to play offensive tackle for a reason.
Break time for us here. Try to squeeze in a phone call when we come back here on One Bills Live. Stay with us. All right, one final segment here on One Bills Live on a Tuesday. Going to squeeze a phone call in. Let's go to Tim in North Carolina. What do you got for us, Tim?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on, squeezing me in at the end of the segment here. I just wanted to say I just listened to Brandon Bean on the Pat McAfee show, actually, and he had a lot of good things to say. So definitely check that out if you guys didn't. They were kind of on at the same time you guys just were. But Darius Butler on the show said something really cool at the end that kind of reminded me that Keon Coleman, if you would have said at the start of the college football season, Keon Coleman, even in the first month, probably would have been a top 10 draft pick. And the idea that he ran slow at the combine, while it is true, Brandon Bean even said it himself to Pat McAfee. He said he absolutely loves it when guys kind of mess up a little bit at the combine because it makes their draft stock fall. So what else are you going to do when you're picking 28th or 30th every year? So I just wanted to start off by saying that I do think the Bills did. I do think the Bills did enough with their offense this year. And I'm even excited about the two guys that came after Keon Coleman. I love that they addressed the defensive line, get guys in the pipeline there. And then also Cole Bishop, because I definitely don't want them to get into a groove of turning over the safety position every single year. So yeah. I want to hear you guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, Tim. Yeah, we had Brandon Bean here before he actually went on the Pat McAfee show today. So listen to that if you missed it at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, we had him hot live. We had to get out so he could go do that. So, yeah, he was making the rounds.
Yeah, but, yeah, Coleman is a guy that plays much faster than he times. I think it's going to surprise some people, maybe even some defenders in the NFL, hopefully for touchdowns. So
we'll see.
That's it for us today here on a Tuesday. Back with plenty more tomorrow. We'll see you at 1 p.m.